Let's go to our Monday expert now, and we're talking fermentation, in particular fermented beverages from kombucha to kefir to kvass, all the K's, as well as maybe some beer and ginger beer if we get time. If you've got a question, you can send it to 2101. I'm joined by Patricio Marshall, the owner of All Things Fermented, and he sells all the stuff you need to make fermented products. Kia ora, Patricio.
Good afternoon.
Hey, really nice to talk to you. I've been excited to do this with you. I've had a bit of a go myself at a few of these over the years, but stoked to be talking to an expert. Can you tell people what we mean when we talk about fermentation?
Okay, well, fermentation is really when you have a yeast or a bacteria, primarily, that will consume sugar, carbohydrate, or fermentable sugars, and convert it into something else. Now, if it's beer or wine, spirits, it's usually alcohol. Well, primarily, it's what you want it to be, alcohol. But with things like kombucha, kvass, or kefir, you're going to get a range of different things. So with kombucha, you will get a small amount of alcohol because there is yeast within the SCOBY, but you've got a lot of different bacteria in there that will turn a lot of that alcohol into acid, and that's where you get your sour tart flavors coming from.
That word SCOBY, tell us about that.
SCOBY, it's a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. So it is a culture that contains a number of different yeasts, a number of different bacteria. Usually you've got lactic bacteria, but also acetic bacteria, so they create different types of acids. And they live sort of harmoniously together. And some of those bacteria can create cellulose, which is why you still see this gelatinous disc form on the top of your kombucha when it's, you know, when it's fermenting.
Some people will be quite uncomfortable with the idea of putting a drink out and hoping that bacteria will take it over. What's your message to them?
When I would recommend, if you're going to make something like kombucha, that you do get a proper SCOBY. So rather than trying to just let a wild fermentation occur, SCOBYs that have been used to make kombucha contain the right mixture of yeast and bacteria that will give you a reliable outcome, a reliable product. But in saying that, it does come down to how you treat it, how you know, the sort of temperature you ferment at, where you place it, making sure it's got all the right conditions to give you the right outcome.
You are basically trying to make the conditions perfect for one type of bacteria, right? And it's the good one.
Well, when you're using a SCOBY, so you say you've purchased a SCOBY, there will be a number of different bacteria in there, as well as yeast. Ideally with kombucha, if you can keep the temperature somewhere around 22 to 30, it's going to favour the action or the activity of all those different yeast and bacteria within the SCOBY to give you a good kombucha. But it also comes down to time. So usually somewhere between 7 to 10 days, you should have a nice product at that point. If you keep it going longer and longer, it's likely to get more and more acidic and more tart. So it might get to a point where it's not something you really want to be drinking. And also, the reason that's getting tart is because the pH is dropping. So once it gets to a very, very low pH, it's probably not a good thing to be drinking anyway. So if it gets below 3, it's heading down towards 2, it's quite acidic and it's probably going to be something that would sort of upset your stomach if you were drinking it.
Yeah, speaking of upset stomachs, is that something you need to be worried about if you've heard these names like kombucha but haven't tried it before? Do you advise people to take it easy?
Most definitely. Kombucha should really be thought of as like a tonic rather than a soda. It's not something you should be really drinking lots and lots of. It's more of something that you would have, say, if you're having a bottle of yogurt or something, it's the same sort of thing. It's a tonic type of drink. And if you haven't had it before, it does have a lot of bacteria in there, which may well be good for your gut, but may also be upsetting to you the first time or so that you have it. So it shouldn't be something that you have a lot of, and you might build up to it as you continue to drink it. But different people will react differently, so definitely don't, no, have a big full bottle of it in one go. Have a small glass and see how it goes.
Somebody wants to know if there's a way to tell when the kombucha has fermented most of the sugar and before it turns to vinegar.
There is a few, I mean, primarily it's taste. And whether it turns to vinegar or not depends on the bacteria you've got in your SCOBY, because vinegar is primarily an acetic acid. So if your SCOBY's got more lactic type bacteria in there, you'll get a different type of tang coming through, and that's really going to come down to the culture that you've got. But in general, yeast will work quite quickly, and with a small amount of sugar that you have in your mixture to make kombucha, it will get rid of that sugar quite quickly. And then the bacteria will act on the acetaldehyde and alcohol that's been created and turn that into acids. But they do need lots of oxygen to be able to do that. So it's quite important that you make sure that there's the whatever you're fermenting in, say a glass jar or a large vessel, that it is open just with some muslin or something over it to stop, dust and other things getting in there, but to allow oxygen to get in there for the bacteria to do its work. Once it's got to the point that you're quite happy with it, it's really a matter of transferring it into something that you can seal up and storing it cold, which should slow down the action pretty quickly. And once there's no access to oxygen, the bacteria can't really do their job anymore, so they won't make any more of that sourness or tartness.
Great, it's all making sense to me. It'll be starting to get pretty technical for some people, but we're going to go deep here because David wants to know. He makes kombucha quite successfully, but he wants to know how to get more fizz in the bottle, and that would presumably involve adding just a little bit of extra sugar before you put that lid on.
That is correct. If you put a bit more sugar into the bottle, when you cap it, you will get more carbonation. So you'll need to keep it warm for maybe a week or so for the yeast to actually consume that sugar. It will create CO2, but it will also create a little bit of alcohol. And because you have capped that bottle and there's no oxygen available to the bacteria, it will not be able to convert that alcohol to anything else. So when I say a little bit, it might be something whereby 0.2, 0.3% alcohol.
And that's what you do with home brew as well, isn't it? You put a I
Correct.
remember doling out the sugar for my dad when he was doing the bottling. By the way, can I say, as someone who's made a bit of kombucha, the bottling is probably the part I look forward to the least. It's can be pretty time consuming, a bit messy, and you sort of have to convince yourself to get around to it, in my experience.
Yeah, bottling is probably the part of the process that is time consuming. You want to make sure that your bottles are clean and sterile. You need to dose each one of them, fill it up, cap it. It's easier if you're using swing top lids because you can just swing the lid on and flip it on.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
nice and easy. Also means that if you over carbonate it, you can just pop the lid off and let some gas out and seal it back up again. So you don't have to worry about, say, little hand grenades being in the fridge.
Yeah. And we talked about adding sugar to help that secondary fermentation, but actually a little bit of fruit juice, or I sometimes use ginger juice, that will have sugar in it and will do the same thing, eh?
Anything that's got fermentable sugar in it will cause carbonation. So it could be a squashed up strawberry if you want it to be. The thing is, you don't know exactly how much sugar you're adding when you're using something else that you can't quantify the amount of sugar. So you can't know whether or not it'll be enough or whether it'll be too much. And if it's too much, it may not break the bottle, but it could mean that you lose half a bottle every time you open it.
2101, if you've got a text, someone wants to know how to buy a SCOBY. Can they get one online? And then how do people send it if it's alive? There are Facebook groups, we'll find out about Patricio's business in a moment. There are Facebook groups that I've used before, and sometimes people will just put the SCOBY in a Ziploc bag with a little bit of sugary tea or something to help it, give it something to eat on the way there, right, Patricio?
Yeah, most of the time you will find that places keep the SCOBY cold all the time until it's been sent. And a day or two or three or four isn't going to be the end of the world for the SCOBY. It should always be kept in essentially some kombucha, so it's in its own environment. I wouldn't necessarily be putting sugar in there because if you're doing that, it might ferment along the way, and by the time it gets there, someone opens it and it's going to explode, which won't be great. But certainly, a few days in transit isn't going to be an issue before it gets to wherever it's going. And then before you use it, just keep it cold until it's time to use it.
Can I just take a moment and say, and by the way, can I just check Patricio or Patricio?
Patricio.
Patricio, sorry about that. Patricio
That's fine.
Marshall, the owner of All Things Fermented. Can I just express before we move on from kombucha my absolute dismay that kombucha companies are adding stevia, an artificial sweetener, to this beautiful drink?
Yes, well, it's very difficult to naturally sweeten it, and it's not meant to be sweet. I mean, I suppose that's the whole point. But by adding some sort of sweetener to it, I suppose you can make it a bit more like a soda. But it's not really what the drink is meant to be. It's meant to be more of a tonic. It's tart. It's healthy. That's what it's meant to be. And I suppose by making it sweet, it also makes it more palatable, so you can drink a lot more of it.
Yeah. Hey, what do you sell at All Things Fermented?
Well, anything that you want to use to ferment. So yes, we sell kombucha SCOBY. We also have things to make kefir, yogurt, beer, wine, spirits, all your equipment, and everything else that you need.
Let's talk about kefir. That's the number one ferment in our house. What's going on? How do you compare it to, say, kombucha?
Well, I suppose it's not terribly different. There is two different types of kefir. So you can get kefir culture that's primarily for milk, or that's a milk kefir, or you can get a water kefir. They can both look like grains. They can also come commercially as a powder, culture. And what they do is that, once again, it's a range of different bacteria, and they will convert sugars primarily into acids.
Bit quicker than kombucha, eh?
Can be a bit quicker. Once again, it does also come down to the amount of sugars that you've got in there. If you're using just milk, for instance, there's not a huge amount of sugar for the bacteria to work on, so it can quite quickly convert that into acids, and more or less 12 to 24 hours later, you have what resembles more like a runny yogurt. And more or less the same with a water kefir. Add a bit of sugar or fruit, whatever you want it to be, and ferment it. And actually, while I'm on that, with kombucha, one thing to never do is don't ever add any of your flavorings, if you are flavoring your kombucha, when it's in contact with the SCOBY.
Sorry, can you say that again?
So you don't want to add any flavorings or any fruit or anything else to kombucha when it's still in contact with the SCOBY. So you don't want the fruit or any flavorings to go into the mix with the SCOBY, because that could affect the SCOBY's performance. It could introduce new bacteria to the mix that aren't really going to work that well with the other bacteria that are there, could change the pH of it. So you always want to have your SCOBY removed before you add any sort of flavoring or fruit, etc., to your kombucha.
On kefir, someone wants to know whether it's possible to wean water kefir grains over to become milk kefir grains, but they're two different things, aren't they?
They're different bacteria, so not really, no. You'd need to get the right culture for the milk fermentation.
One person likes to bottle some of their kombucha in a glass bottle and some in a plastic bottle, so you can squeeze the plastic bottle to assess the carbonation level. That's a good tip, eh? You can feel when it becomes hard to squeeze that it's fizzy.
Yep, it's a quite common thing amongst all sorts of brewers, is to have one bottle that's plastic, so you can then just see when it's nice and tight and hard, and you know that the carbonation's taken effect. The one thing to be careful of with kombucha, because the pH can get quite low, make sure you're using a good food safe or food grade plastic, because there is the risk if it gets to a very low pH, it could leach what's ever in the plastic.
Oh, good one. Thank you. Yeah, someone just puts their completed kombucha in a jar in the fridge and drinks it straight out of that. Is that a problem? It won't be, except you won't get the fizz, right? Because there's
No,
no chance
no
for
problem.
and you probably
There's
want
no
to
problem.
what, take the
People who
SCOBY out.
use it. I'd take the SCOBY out just for simplicity, and also to make sure you don't just contaminate it, essentially. But there are people who have like a crock with a tap on it and ferment and just sort of run it out of the crock straight into a glass and drink. So there's no issue with that. Just if you're not keeping the fridge, if you're keeping it warm, it will continue to ferment and get more acidic.
I would say to people not to expect too much from the flavour of milk kefir as a drink. I don't think many people love the flavour of milk kefir. We use it to soak oats and we put it in smoothies. That's for what it's worth from me, Patricia. I don't know if you've got a view on that.
Well, I'd say it's not really my favorite either. It's sort of like thin yogurt, but not really. It doesn't have the right consistency, and it's a not quite the same. And it's not something that you flavour with anything really either. Although you could if you wanted to.
No, and I've tried heating it up and adding turmeric or making a turmeric latte, but it just splits as soon as you heat it up, and you're probably going to lose all that good alive stuff. What about water-based kefir?
Because
Is that that's a bit tastier, eh?
well, yeah, I mean, essentially you can flavour it with whatever you want as well. So it makes it a lot easier to make. It's more like a sort of a slightly spritzy tonic, really. So quite easy to drink. And with the kefir, if it's the milk kefir, the reason it all splits because the pH has dropped. So as soon as you heat it up, it's like making cheese, etc. Because the low pH, it splits into curds and whey.
Someone says, and I can thoroughly endorse this, is for a treat, putting cream in with your milk kefir grains instead of milk, that creates the most delicious, luscious. Have you ever tried that, Patricio?
I have not tried that myself, no.
Oh man, you have it with a piece of chocolate cake like you would have yogurt. It's so good. Thank you for that reminder on text. Tony would like to point out that stevia is not artificial, it's a natural plant extract. Yes, Tony, I was just objecting to having to add sweetener to something which is perfect on its own. What about kvass? Have you got any experience of that, Patricio?
Well, kvass is sometimes called like a bread beer. Really, it is rye bread, dark bread, soaked in water that is then fermented. And I suppose if we go back to when it originally would have been made, it would have been a wild ferment. It would have been whatever yeast and bacteria was on the bread and whatever else was put in there that would have created a fermentation and given you a sort of tangy, slightly fizzy sort of a drink. People these days tend to make it with the bread, etc., but add sugar and yeast, which means that you are going to get immediate fermentation, but you won't get that sort of tangy sort of result that you would get from a more natural fermentation. You could try using, like, if you're a sourdough maker, you like to make sourdough, you could use a little bit of your sourdough starter instead of yeast, and that would give you that nice sort of tangy result on the kvass as well.
Somebody makes a lot of vegetarian products with gluten from high-grade flour, and they generate a lot of wheat starch in the process, and they wonder if there's anything they can use that for in terms of fermentation.
Well, yeah, starch is one of those things. Starch is not really accessible to the yeast or the bacteria. It's a long chain sugar, so you'd need to break it down first or use enzymes to break it down. And once you've done that, if you can turn it into fermentable sugar, then it's just sugar for fermentation, which yeast will or bacteria will act on.
Someone says use coconut milk for milk kefir and add orange peel. It's an incredible taste. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
That sounds interesting. Yeah, I mean, you can certainly use coconut milk. There's no issues with that. And yeah, flavour it with something to make it more palatable.
Yeah, because I presume that the kefir grains are feeding on the lactose in the milk, and that something like coconut milk wouldn't have that lactose. Have I got that wrong?
It wouldn't have the lactose, but it would still have, as long as there's sugars or some sort of carbohydrate source that
Oh,
actually
yeah.
will ferment on it, yeah.
Yeah, someone uses it every third cycle. They use coconut milk and then I guess feed it up and get it back to strength with the traditional milk. Meg wants to know if kombucha's suitable for kids.
Well, it's not necessarily unsuitable, but if you are making it at home, you just need to be careful about making sure that you're not getting a little bit too much alcohol in the kombucha. And of course, it is acidic and it has got lots of bacteria in there, so everyone will react differently. And with children, you probably only want to have very small amounts to begin with for sure.
David would like to know if SCOBYs have a finite life. He says it looks like his is just getting more and more layers, but he wants to know if it can go on indefinitely.
Wouldn't say it has a finite life, like the bacteria and the yeast will continue to do everything they can to live, but it might not deliver you the results that you're after. So it might get to a point where it's just not as flavorful the flavors that you want. And that's where you might want to then get a new SCOBY. If you could along the way, if you notice it might every now and then grow a little nodule towards on the top of the SCOBY, and it's often called the daughter. And the big disc is called the mother. If when that happens, if you can harvest that and keep that in some kombucha, then you could then grow that up and create a new SCOBY.
Yeah, the main problem I have with fermenting is having too much of the stuff. Like you've got to chuck out some of those milk kefir grains from time to time. They grow really fast, and kombucha as well. I've heard it's quite good for the garden, so I do. If I'm feeling organised, I'll tend to bury mine.
Yeah, it's probably fair few nutrients in there, so probably not too bad at all.
What about ginger-based ferments?
So if you're looking at, say, traditional ginger beer, which used to be called the ginger bug, you can essentially create that pretty easily. Grate up some ginger, just a little knob of ginger, into a bowl with some water and some sugar, and you're essentially letting the yeast and bacteria on the ginger in the air start a fermentation. Keep on doing that until you see fizz. And so I say add a teaspoon or two of sugar every day until you see the fizz in the water, so the carbonation's there. And you have a starter bug that you can then use to make ginger beer.
It's pretty good fun, eh? Don't you reckon? It's pretty addictive.
Oh, it's great fun making all sorts of different fermented beverages or foods, as the case may be. It will be a bit of hit and miss from time to time, and takes a little while to get used to how things behave. And I think that the big thing with any of these things, particularly if you're wanting to get a consistent result, is you do have to be clean and as sanitary as you can to ensure that the fermentation that is occurring is only occurring with the yeast and bacteria that you want to be doing the job and not with something else that might have got in there that you didn't want to be in there.
Good advice. I must admit, I never really got the hang of or felt as comfortable making beer. I enjoyed drinking it, but there seems to be just so many extra things to think about. Any view on that, Patricio?
Well, it does depend on how you're making your beer. So if you're making beer from an extract kit that has got liquid extract that you then mix up with water, the key things with that are to ensure you're clean, sanitary, and that you maintain the right fermentation temperature for the yeast that you're using. And that's probably the place or the area that most people would go wrong to begin with. It's probably a little bit more finicky than some of these other things we've been talking about. The beer yeast probably has a smaller range of temperature that it's happy within. And the flavors that aren't so nice that it could give off if the fermentation gets too warm shine through a lot more. And because beer in general isn't meant to be tart, there are sour beers as well, but they are produced in a very specific way as well. If it's not meant to be a sour beer and it's got a little tanginess to it, it stands out quite a lot. And also with beer, a lot of people probably try to get it into the bottle or the keg or whatever they're packaging in a little bit too quickly. And that means the yeast hasn't had the time to reabsorb some of those flavors that you don't want, some of the byproducts that's created during fermentation, and they end up staying in the beer. The key things being the ones that are most common are acetaldehyde, which has a sort of a tart green apple-y flavor, but cidery, but metallic. And the other one is diacetyl, which can be a bit like artificial popcorns, like caramel popcorns, like butteriness. And they're not overly pleasant in anything, really.
Heaps of gear required to make beer, right?
From extract, not really, no. Just a fermenter, something to stir with, bottles, a hydrometer to measure sugar content.
Here we go.
So a few things, but if you're brewing from grain, then yeah, there's a lot more equipment required to brew from grain. But at the same time, it's another extra process that you're going through. It's quite enjoyable. And once you're brewing with grain, well, you can brew anything you want because you're not sort of constrained by what extract you can get. You get all sorts of different grains, all sorts of different hops, all sorts of different yeast, and you can create anything you want.
A lot of, probably most of what we do in terms of home fermentation, we're introducing a yeast or a bacteria that is designed for the job. Can we talk for a couple of minutes about wild fermentation and how successful that might be, just leaving it out and hoping for the best?
Yeah, well, originally most of the yeast that we use and the bacteria would have come from a wild ferment way, way, way back. But they've been reused and reused and reused and actually sort of become domesticated yeast. With wild yeast, the risks are that you just end up with something that's not overly palatable. And it really depends on what wild yeast are in the area that you're in. There were, say, for in breweries, there were breweries in Belgium where they would run the hot wort, which is what the sugary liquid is called before it's fermented into beer, into cool ships, which are long, sort of shallow containers up in the rafters of the brewery. And it would cool there quite quickly. But also, that's where the wild yeast lived, and it would just inoculate the wort at that point and get run off into the fermenters, and it would ferment away quite happily. But because they've done it over a long period of time, and the results are what they want, and that's the yeast that's living there, it works for them. But if the yeast or the bacteria that you get off, well, out of the air, the container, whatever it is that you're trying to ferment, may not be very produce a very good product, you could end up with something that's just pretty horrible, really. Or you could be lucky. It's one of those things, you just don't know.
Couple of questions before we go. People asking about using honey rather than sugar in their kombucha. That would work just the same way, but not sure it'd be worth the extra cost of the honey. What do you think?
Honey is more or less 90 to 95% sugar. So as far as the bacteria, the yeast are concerned, they'll just consume the sugar. As they would consume the other sugar, there'll be a small amount of other stuff left behind, but whether or not you can taste the difference, really, I suppose it comes down to the strength of the honey. If you use a very strongly flavoured honey, you might pick up a little bit of it. I know if you use like dark sugars, etc., you can get a little bit of a caramelly flavour coming through.
Hey, thank you. It's been a great session.
Not a problem at all.
If you need more equipment or advice, Patricio's business is called All Things Fermented, and he sells pretty much anything you could need to make any of the beverages we've been talking about today: kombucha, milk or water kefir, and beer.